Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 27, I want to say, of the Distraction Pieces podcast. My name's Scroobius Pip. Thank you very much for tuning in, guys. We got a really interesting one this week. My guest this week goes under two names, Tool Doc Friend and Miss Jordan Gray. And, before I get into it, I should get into the adverts and promote stuff. Speech Development Records. Go to speechdevelopmentrecords.com. We've got loads of music. You've got my Edinburgh Fringe show. I recommend that. But that's one that if you weren't looking to buy the DVD, you can download, the downloads are Fiverr, so it feels like a good one to recommend for people who fancy taking a punt at it. Speechdevelopmentrecords.com. You can also get the new B. Dolan record. He's about to come on. He's literally days away from arriving on tour over here. So the Kill the Wolf a vinyl, that's this special vinyl that looks black, and then if you hold it up to the light, it glows blue, midnight blue it's called. So check that out. It's fantastic. All at speechdevelopmentrecords.com, and it supports the podcast as well. This week's guest, as I said, I got sent a video on Twitter by, let's give him a shout out, by David Maguire, at Maguire David, just recommending a video, just saying, I think you need to hear this track, Pip, Tilbury Trans Girl, smashes prejudice and references Pokemon. And I checked it out and I really enjoyed the track. And I'm actually going to play the track in this podcast. And I just thought it'd be a fascinating conversation. Obviously, everything in trans culture and everything trans related has blown up recently with Caitlyn Jenner. And it's suddenly become a far more discussed, it's a far more open thing, which is fantastic. But I was interested in how different that is in somewhere like Tilbury, which is up the road from me. I've lived near there my whole life. I've gone past it thousands of times on the train. And I wondered if there'd be a difference there in being a trans woman in Hollywood and being a trans a woman in Grays. This isn't a reflection on Jordan, but my instant thought was there's got to be a difference between putting on a Gucci dress and walking up Hollywood Boulevard and popping on, you know, a Primark top and walking past Tilbury Station. You know, there's going to be huge differences there that I wanted to hear about and discuss, and it's a fascinating subject, and the conversation was fantastic. This all happened, so I got that tweet on the Tuesday, and I was busy all day, so I'd saved it, I'd emailed it to myself, and then I heard it, the track, on the Wednesday, and I followed Tool Doc Friend on Twitter, and then we started talking, and we did the podcast on Thursday, so it was that quick a turnover, but I was delighted with it. I'm going to stop rambling because this isn't, as you probably learned from a lot of these podcasts, they're not particularly about me. I may be the front person of it, but they're about the guests. So let's get straight into that. This is episode 57 with Miss Jordan Gray, Tool Doc Friend.
This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So that's rolling now. Hello.
Hi.
That's my big start. I'm joined by Miss Jordan Gray, a.k.a. Tall Dark Friend.
That's me.
And you've invited me kindly into a nice, comfortable living room. And I've brought all my uncomfortable gear to take over the place. And
that's great. Thanks for being here. Have you noticed all the Elvis stuff everywhere?
It's now great. Yeah, there's a lot of Elvis stuff.
This is my father's house. I think it's the only artist he's ever listened to.
Amazing. Yeah. You've got to love Elvis, right?
Yeah. He's looking at the crocheted Elvis picture on the wall.
Yeah, I am. That's what I was drawn to immediately. Are you an Elvis fan as well?
I am. I'm a big Elvis fan. With that. I love it.
What era of Elvis are you?
He's kind of into everything. I'm 68 comeback and beyond. I really like that session. Yeah. Stax Studio Sessions.
I agree completely. Amazing. I think the kind of the GI Blues type era and absolutely, all that is kind of the early Elvis. I find it's lovely, but the later Elvis, it feels like he's lived as Elvis for a bit, and that's more exciting to me because no one else has lived as Elvis. Mm. It's such a unique person that when it was new and fresh, it wasn't, you know, after he's lived as Elvis and you can see the damage of it in many ways, it's far more exciting to me.
Well, my father was telling me yesterday it was almost the case that the 68 comeback was going to be a really watered down kind of Christmassy thing. He was going to be sitting there in his little jumper on the couch, and it wasn't the Colonel, it wasn't his manager, it was somebody else brought in this idea of getting him out there in the leathers and doing all this new stuff. And
amazing,
that era could
right?
not have happened. And that's amazing. Yeah. That is quintessential Elvis for me.
Yeah. That's amazing that could have... Because, it really is. It's one of the most distinctive. Because if you think prior to that, it was all... Jean, it was sexual, but it was all jeans, open shirt, but quite tame and still quite. It wasn't quite what it turned into in the leather jumpsuits and the absolute.
They showed his hips on TV.
Yeah,
that, do you remember that the whole thing with the Ed
they
Sullivan
allowed,
show?
And they weren't allowed to.
That's insane.
How is it? I mean,
the angles they cover now on some of the girls dancing on TV.
I mean, I was going to say it's a hell of a pair of hips. Anyway, so credit to that, but the angles they switch to and change now. Before we started rolling, we were discussing a Miley Cyrus.
Yeah.
And it may be a shock to some of you, but we were discussing Miley Cyrus in a positive light and positive manner, which I'm sure we'll get to later. But just thinking there's just, I mean, the freedom of media and Instagram just means I've seen possibly every angle of Miley Cyrus that is possible to see.
I don't even follow her
on Instagram yet. It comes up so much on the recommended and that I've literally seen every angle of young Miley. We only started talking about this yesterday, and it's come together really quickly as a podcast.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to be here. Let's clarify. You were assigned male at birth, and you're now 2 years... A full-time female estrogen therapy.
Yeah, that's the whole.
That's basically. Obviously, we'll get into all that a lot more because I find it fascinating. And it's incredibly trendy at the moment to be covering trans culture and everything trans. And it's something that not that I've shied away from, but I try not to just go, "Oh, this is cool. Let's try and cover that now." But what excited me about talking to you was, you're going through all this and have been for a couple of years now in Tilbury, in Essex, not in Hollywood or even in London. And for anyone who doesn't know, Tilbury is just up the road from me. In fact, it's between me and the first guest, Russell Brand. It's between where we grew up.
Exactly.
It's literally in the middle there. And it's not the most glamorous or certainly not the most open-minded of areas. So that instantly... fascinated me of the reality of all of this.
I find Thurrock it's a desperate feeling place. It's a very physical sensation I'm aware of as I'm speeding away on the train out of Thurrock, how all the pressure just drops, all the tension drops. It's a very peculiar feeling. It's so tense in Thurrock. And obviously I grew up there, so there's going to be connections there and stuff.
Yeah, of course.
It has taught me that, because of the lack of education, that no one is inherently an evil or a bad person with the things they say. It's all sincere. They're saying what they're saying. They sincerely mean what they're saying. And I sort of can't knock sincerity, even if it's misguided. That's my
completely,
little ethos,
completely.
Know?
Yeah. There's
There's a quote I say all the time, and I think I'm now intentionally not remembering who it's by. But it's very relevant. It's Harlan's as someone. But it's just saying that, because again, in our area as well, you'll get a lot of people saying, well, you know, I'm entitled to my opinion. Yeah, that's my opinion. So. I'm entitled to. And there's a great quote of, we are not entitled to our own opinions. We are entitled to our own informed opinions.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. I think it's a beautiful thing, but I think it really rings through growing up in the areas that we've grown up in, because there's so many people, as you said, there is a sincerity and there's not, they truly believe that. Yeah. And again, let's clarify, Thurrock is one of the strongholds of UKIP. It's one of the strongest bases of UKIP. We were one of the few areas where it was a slight sigh of relief when the Tories got in, because the nearest alternative was genuinely looking like it may be UKIP. Yeah. So despite everyone in the country quite rightfully being furious at the Tories taking power, there was an element of, well, it could have been worse.
Absolutely, it could legitimately have been worse.
Yeah, and sure. Again, it's that whole thing of, and I'm sure you'll have this as well, there'll be so many people you went to school with who you're like, oh, they're all right, but they are UKIP voters, or they are this and they are that. And it's something I really struggle with, because the fact is they're not all right. They're not all right. It's not all right to have those opinions. Okay. It's uneducated.
Yeah,
but
there's another quote. Again, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Ricky Gervais, I remember, who would say it about, you do, the way we live our lives, you are supposed to respect people's right to have an opinion. You have no obligation to respect that opinion. And there's a big difference.
Yeah
you don't have to let people get away with that stuff.
Yeah.
So right for them to have the right to say it, You absolutely don't have to give it any credence whatsoever. Yeah.
Again, we're just going quote for quote now, but I remember Stephen Fry brilliantly ranting once about the fact that people feel they have a right to not be offended by stuff. Yeah. And he was like, I don't care if someone tells me I'm offended by that. It's like, well, good for you.
Yeah.
That's part of you. You're entitled to be offended by that, but that doesn't mean I shouldn't say it or shouldn't.
No, it's something.
I believe in and stand for. And again, particularly with, obviously, a lot of his history will be of sexuality and things like that, where he came up against, you know, resistance. And it's like, that's fine for you to be offended by me, by anything I say. So kind of how has it been... And again, I want to get onto the reason I heard about you was because of your music, and I want to get into all that. But this is a fascinating starting point of how have the last 2 years been, and how were the years leading up to those 2 years?
I'm very aware that I've not had it as hard as a lot of trans people that I know in many respects. I have a gender-neutral name. I was born Jordan, so that just was easy.
That's
although
perfect.
My GP said to me, so when are you going to change your name? It's like, why would I want to do that? It's on all my albums and all my books and everything. It's just an administrative nightmare. Yeah. I did have to pay. You have to pay to change your name. There's no procedure, believe it or not, legally, to go from Mr. to Ms. to change that one letter. You
really?
Have to change your name. So I added a second middle name to get that extra S. So my second middle name is Gossamer, which is spider's web.
Yeah.
So I'm just into spiders. Yeah. So, yeah, I've been very privileged.
That's fascinating that there isn't a legal process for changing from...
You'd think they just want to take your money, but no, you have to change your name. She said, would you consider changing the spelling of Jordan? I was like, it's on everything.
Yeah.
It's on my business cards and my email. Like,
yeah, exactly. That's too much effort to go through all of these. Yeah. Your Facebook,
exactly,
you know, everything else. It's like there's too much now that you've already registered yourself in.
Also because I am an entertainer and I have been since I left college, I think people at first thought it was just like a costume change, almost like a Bowie kind of thing. It was just a different chapter, which was hard. But again, I've transitioned very easily because then people realised I was able to literally walk on stage however I wanted one day and they go, oh, Jordan's a bit quirky this week.
I mean, that's kind of a beautiful advantage then of kind of a way of breaking the news as such in the least subtle way. Mm. Like being able to walk out in front of all of your friends, you know, and go, like, look, this is, and then we'll go, all right, well, that's, you know, this is going, it's on stage. So it kind of softens any shock or blow to then be, no, this is me now.
And, I came out on stage at the Essex Entertainment Awards in 2014. Oh, wow. I was already dressed up. It wasn't like I suddenly said I was in a catsuit.
Yeah.
But it's that thing as well. Once you're on the stage, the front, you don't have to put up any more front than that. You're already on the stage. So people that don't know, you say, all right, well, that's a legitimate thing that's going on right here. Like, it, you know, she's now saying that she's transgender.
Yeah.
You know, the public, like, you said on stage, that's, I don't have to justify it. Yeah.
And it's beautiful, a thing like that, because... as weird as it is, the scariness of having a public figure for that kind of thing, it also means you don't have to explain it to every person.
No.
Because word will get round and it'll be there. Yeah. It's like people will just know that there'll be a week or two where people go, oh, have you heard about Jordan Cunning? But it's good because it means that you're not having to do that.
That conversation 100 times.
By the way,
yeah, exactly.
The reason I'm in a dress today is I was
very ill from 2005 to 2008. Very ill for sensory perception disorder.
Right.
And I wrote my first autobiography with that exact same intent, that I wish that everyone would just have a copy so I wouldn't have to have that conversation a million times with everyone.
Just read this and then we'll meet up tomorrow.
That's it. And it just passes by, so I've been fortunate.
So what was that? Were you in hospital for extended period of time? It was outpatient basis.
It's like very common. Synesthesia is a very, very common thing. It's just an atypical presentation of that. So spatial awareness is sometimes a bit difficult for me. But I'm also on a lot of estrogen now, which genuinely, this is the amazing part about the human brain. It's so incredible. So we've evolved. We've got this binary difference between men and women. We can talk about all this, but I don't want to go crazy into the science. We've got the male circuit, this 3D sort of spatial awareness, that comes with hunting and gathering food, and a social and emotional circuit that was used to knit the family unit when we still lived in tribes, you know.
Yeah.
We have both those circuits, but they express themselves differently based on what hormone is flushing through your body as you grow, you know, from an embryo upwards. So we're now switched to estrogen. The male circuit's shut down, physically shut down. It's called epigenetics.
And the
female ones are loading up. So every social interaction I have now, it's like, it's the first time I've ever done it. It's so incredible.
That's amazing.
But I do get lost a lot more in car parks.
Again, it's exciting that it's so, that we're learning to have such control over these things, to be able to go, right, let's turn that bit off and turn this bit on.
Well, that's it's the thing that really, this is the theories that I have putting forward a little paper on it.
Mm.
In nature, this idea of sexual dimorphism, you know, the difference between the male and the female of some species, like snakes and spiders, the female is so much larger and you can tell the difference.
Yeah.
With mammals, mammalian evolution, it tends not to be too much of a difference, you know, especially with humans. If you imagine like a naked male and naked female, like we are now sitting here. Ungroomed, they're essentially the same thing apart from a few minor differences, the mammary glands.
Yeah.
So we have hijacked that, our own evolution, as we do with almost every aspect of evolution, we've hijacked that and accentuated that difference with external things like different clothes and different behaviours to serve to sort of widen that binary divide.
Yeah, to make it a clearer difference.
Right. Which, I mean, whether or not that's a good thing, I don't know, but it does still serve a purpose, even though it's so sort of illusory. It means that for a trans person like me, if it was just a case of your men or women based on your genital presentation, I'm not embarrassed to admit I'd be in the male camp at this point in my life,
which is
unfortunate because I don't have the skill set to be a man. My brain is female. So to have those two camps, you can gravitate towards the one that you feel most comfortable with, and then you find solace there. In a very peculiar way that we've evolved.
It definitely is. It's fascinating how we try and accentuate that, and I don't know if that's a discomfort, a fear of being confused. Here's what I'm into. They look like that, and they have makeup on, and they have this. Rather than it being this confusing a crossover, I find it fascinating. There's often a misperception that that homosexuality was accepted in amongst the Greeks. It's not that. It just wasn't a thing. They didn't have gay or straight. They had dominant and submissive, essentially. It was essentially regardless of gender, you were attracted. If you were a dominant person, you were attracted to a submissive type, and that just went across the genders. It wasn't even a myth that it's like, oh, everyone was gay or this that. It's like, no, that didn't even, there no, wasn't even that, there wasn't even that divide. It was just, is that a vessel that can, to put it bluntly, is that a vessel that can satisfy me sexually?
Because
it was such a separate thing there. They had their intellectual goals and areas, and they had their sexual and physical needs and desires, and it wasn't a crossed over thing.
It's almost more of an evolved thing, you know, more of an evolved way of going about things. I know my friend just got back from Thailand, and he said similar premise, but with gender. There's no real, until the influx of Western culture, they didn't have a word for he and she.
Really?
So when you translate into English, Thai people will just say he for everyone or she for everyone. I don't know the actual
internals. Yeah.
But yeah, that's amazing.
It's fascinating that also, which term is it? baby used to mean specifically... No, I can't think what it was, actually. No, it's one of the terms, either boy or girl,
okay.
used to just mean child.
Right,
and
it wasn't
a separated thing. Yeah. Again, I should have researched this more and got the facts. But there's numerous things like that it just meant child.
Yeah,
and then it became. I'm sure it was girl. And then it became because it then again that divide and that instantly in blue or in pink. It became that divide.
Absolutely.
And became a thing. Which,
as far as I remember, anecdotally, I think someone told me that used to be the other way around.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Victorian era, maybe earlier than that.
Yeah.
Plantagenet era, it was pink for boys and blue for girls.
It's fascinating. It's bizarre
because it's all so illusory, but it's part of the human experience. So we are here now, so it's important to us. In the grand scheme of things, like I pride myself on my objectivity my whole life. That's been my kind of thing. And yet I'm aware, very aware, that I spend a lot of time doling myself up, because if I don't, then I'll get misgendered and I'll receive the wrong pronouns. So the act of sort of doling yourself up feels like a very trivial thing.
Yeah.
And in the grand scheme, it is. And yet at the same time, it takes up so much of my life.
Yeah.
And I do put time into it.
Because it's an important thing to because of how we interact and perceive people. It's like you need to make it clear, here's how you're meant to be reacting to me.
Even if they know just what I'm going for. That's another misconception.
Give the rough direction.
Yeah, well, some people think that transgender people are out to fool the opposite sex into thinking they were genetically born.
Yeah.
That I have no delusion that I was born female.
Yeah.
And I'm now, I've gone through some metamorphosis.
Yeah.
It's a genetic difference. The X and Y, the genetic binary, that's only relevant in medicine and to doctors. Everything else, you are this is the takeaway phrase, is that you are the gender you present as.
Yeah.
That's the accepted sort of the way it is now. You know, you are the gender that you present as. And you don't flip between the two. That's a very different thing. You know, I've got to contend for every sort of legitimate trans woman that's going through this process. There's sort of 9 cross-dressing men.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a different thing. It's a lifestyle choice for sexual or emotional reasons, you know. And that is something, that's a stereotype we have to contend with, because being trans can be quite infantilizing anyway.
Again, it's such a confusing thing, and I want to go into all of that with, as said, with cross-dressing. We'll talk later on the entertainment side with drag queens and things like that. It's still newly being discussed and it's still not really understood. So... even on the sexuality side, let's start off with when you kind of decided or realised that you were incorrectly gender...
okay. Well, I remember... misgendered.
Yeah, misgendered.
Or whatever.
But
that's the other thing. Just because I'm transgender, that doesn't mean I'm a hub for all the info.
You know all the terms.
I don't know the terms.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like... I was saying to someone the other day, if there was an issue on race or something, you just thought... I'll ask Sam Jackson, because he's the most famous black person I know.
He'll know everything about
race. He wasn't
race.
Involved in the incident,
you
know. So I don't know all the terms, but I do my best.
Yeah.
I don't remember thinking I was a girl when I was little. I just didn't think I was a boy. I thought there was something wrong and I was an alien or something. You know? And then you grow up and you fit the role.
Yeah.
Just feeling very uncomfortable, and everything was always conflicted. So I never had any authentic emotional interactions with people. I just thought going through the motions and not knowing why. 19, I realised that that was what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Took me till 25 to realise the science was available. And I'm very into science. So as soon as I locked onto that, I was in on it, researching as long as I could. And I just went in there, and they say on the sites, if you know that you're a transgender person, just go in there and tell them, I'd like my medicine now, please. Because otherwise you're going to be on a waiting list for years and they'll try and figure it out. You say, no, I know what the situation is. And they'll know straight away if it's not.
Yeah.
You know. He said, okay, no, fair enough. Yeah, we'll get around to it. Let's do it.
That's great that it's not... You had the forethought to do your own research, come to your own decision, and not have that need of, I need to sit down with someone and talk about this. Because again, that gives the illusion that you're probably just a bit confused. It's this is fine. I know what's going on.
Yeah. And of course it's okay to be confused, but again, there's so many resources out there, and people, and now that it is more of an open dialogue, I just did a week in a primary and junior school teaching trans awareness and
amazing.
Music therapy at the same time. It was the most privileged thing I've ever done. It's so fantastic. I was teaching them to beatbox and things, because they'd all
amazing.
Heard the music, you know?
Yeah.
They just get it. They just get it straight away. They've got the best questions.
Yeah.
You answer it once and they're like, oh, okay, sure. The most lewd thing I think anyone asked me was about how the size of my boobs and how big they were going to get.
Yeah.
There was no giggling or snickering. They were just listening intently, like, you know.
But that's the brilliant thing with... And it's why it's so crucial to teach all of these things at school level is... Everyone's just comfortable. No one knows what you shouldn't maybe ask.
You just ask anything.
So that was part of the educate and celebrate,
educate and celebrate scheme. That's right,
scheme. Yeah. And again, I think that's great. And is that a local thing? Is that a world, a national thing?
It's a national thing. It's being rolled out at the moment. From my understanding, it was a flagship scheme at Malden Primary School.
Yeah.
And it went very, very well. And yeah, it was an independent company that's now been taken on as a government scheme. So it's going from strength to strength. And I'm hoping that they'll now stick me in secondary schools because I'm quite ready for that barrage of sort of confusion and stuff.
Real confusion.
I'd like to really get in there and just dig through the snickering and the laughing and get to the core of it, because that's going to be a different thing entirely. That's going to be carnage.
Completely different. And also in that situation, that's the one where it'll be that bit more thankless because
the people you do reach...
are more likely to be going home and having these realizations rather than saying it in front of their classmates or anything else.
Absolutely.
It'll be the ones that stay quiet that are going. There'll be a load of ones that are talking shit and being kind of
write your question down on a paper and being offensive. Picture of
picture of anything obscene and things like that. But that will be exciting and interesting in that it will be the ones that you do reach that you possibly don't know you've reached that would be the most important, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. There is that age, that turnover, I think, from sort of junior to senior school. We finished that week and we went and flew multicoloured kites in the field and it was LGBT celebration. We had to walk through their senior school to get to this big field.
Yeah.
And it was this really weird atmosphere. Everyone's staring at me. I've got a bit of an afro, to be fair, as well.
Yeah.
So there's that. But I'm a transgender. I'm quite obviously transgender, you know. I'm not blessed in all areas. These kids are staring, and the little toddlers at my sort of feet that have been with me all week, they're involved now. They're totally happy with everything. They understand the situation. Yeah. They're saying to me, "Do you know that they're looking at you?" And they're confused. Their older brothers and sisters are kind of staring. Yeah. I was like, "Well, that's now your responsibility. You're going to be in that school next year, you know."
Yeah.
It was weird to think they had this sort of sense of they would now go home and talk to their older brothers and sisters about it. And I've heard little anecdotes from the teachers that this has gone on now. They've gone home and educated their families.
Explained it. That's so exciting and so important as well. And again, not to keep kind of shitting on the area that we've both grown up in, but that's really important for educating the people that you can't reach.
Yes.
Just if kids can genuinely educate their parents. I used to work in HMV in Beckton, and there was a security guard there who was a big skinhead guy. And my manager who took me on there was like, "Give him a chance," because he like it was proper, like, "All right, bruv," like talked really gruff. He's like, "Give him a chance." And I remember he was the first person that came in to me and was like, "Pip, I was reading poetry last night and I found a poem called The Scroobius Pip. Is that where you got your name?" I was like, of all the people to call me out on where it came from, I was like, "Mate," but he was formerly a card-carrying member of the BNP.
Oh, blimey. Okay.
And was, you know, he had... But then it turned out he'd educated himself on this and was, you know, was saving up to have his tattoo of a bulldog with a Union Jack erased. And the beautiful thing there was, a few years down the line, we went round his house where he lived with his dad, and we took a black friend of ours. And his dad, again, the thing that impressed me the most was he'd grown up as that. He'd been brought up to be racist, essentially.
Yeah,
sure. He'd pulled himself out of it, and then he'd gradually started to turn his 60-year-old dad around, who spent 60 years thinking that blacks are leeching off the society and trouble, and turn everyone round. And that inspires me way more than someone like myself who happens to be brought up by liberal parents who have taught me that everyone's equal, everything's right. Yeah. It's easy for me to be all right about
sort of
these things.
Left-leaning philosophy.
It's more impressive when I see people who, in all... It would be completely fair if they were racist idiots, bigoted idiots, because that's how that's what they've grown up around. So that's what's exciting about... are working with the younger kids is that they can then, it can hopefully climb up the ladder in some way.
Well, I was saying that, I say this story of your friend there, it's a testament to the problem solving powers of the human brain, that they were indoctrinated by a group of people, you know. They didn't then move to another group of people who gave them an opposing viewpoint. The neutral state of the brain, it elevated them, or they elevated themselves out of that.
They questioned
it wasn't another indoctrination. It was just, that's
just natural, this isn't illogical. Yeah. This
surely
doesn't
that
make
says
sense
something
to me.
About the state of right and wrong, you know, on these issues, that the brain logically arrives at a place of sort of peace and understanding and not tolerance. That's not really the word you want to use, is it?
No,
it's not something that needs to be tolerated.
No, but that again, and it does feel, and as you said, in our area, it does feel like it's a case of education, and that's why it's important. It was interesting. Now, it hadn't even crossed my mind. This is going to sound really stupid, but it hadn't even crossed my mind that these junior school kids are going to grow up. You know, it was literally you get the thought, you're teaching it to young kids now,
we'll
and then you'll teach the older kids.
Like,
no, they will become the older kids. So that's the beautiful thing, that next year that they will be the ones that at this point would be sniggering and laughing. Mm. So if you're going to the schools in years to come, it will have that much more acceptance all the way along, right?
Sending them out into the world, It is absolutely wonderful.
So how was it when you then... How is it in Thurrock, as someone who's going through the therapies and through the changes that you're going through?
There's areas that I wouldn't... I'm couch surfing here at the moment. Yeah. All of my work is in the southeast, London and Essex, a lot of Essex.
Yeah.
So I'm couch surfing. We're in Hornchurch right now, Basildon I'm sometimes in. There's areas of Tilbury that I wouldn't want to go back to and graze.
Yeah.
But I've got a great relationship with Thurrock. Like, they've been so good to me. The Thurrock Gazette was the first one to sort of cover my music when I was actually still very ill. You know, the Essex Entertainment Awards, and I play that Tea Fest every year that's now the Grays Village Beach. And, you know, for the last few years, I've been the way I am now, and it's been adopted really well. I've got such a nice reputation in Thurrock. It's hard for me to feel any, not that I should feel animosity towards it, but I'm always on that. My default position is, they don't really understand.
So I get it completely. Like, it's completely different, but being... before it was all accepted and fashionable, but having a big beard and living in our area and looking like, I would generally get people trying to fight me.
It's almost the other end of the spectrum.
Exactly. But people would think I'm a Muslim and would be racist against me in that way. And I'm a dick. I can't just say, no, I'm not. Because that would be saying as if, it would be okay to fight me if I was a Muslim, but I'm not a Muslim. So I would never say, I'd just be like, right, so what's the problem with that? And kind of end up getting in more trouble. But still, I've not left. I still live in Stamford. Yeah. I still feel, despite all its problems, it's somewhere that's developing and somewhere that's going through these changes. And if you, it would be easy for you to, for example, go to parts of London where it's so much more liberal,
trouble in London, not a single incident.
Exactly. It's so much more accepted. I mean, in many ways, it's big business. Mm. You know, you can have a night that's an LGBT night that hasn't got any real name behind it, and it'll be packed because of that scene. Yeah. So it would be easy for you to go there, but is that really helping the cause? And not that it should be anyone's responsibility or task to help the cause,
but at the same time, life is short. So it's almost like, well, yeah, I don't mind kind of putting all my energy into changing things because I'm going to be gone soon.
Yeah.
And if the long lasting effects of that is worth much more to me than the sort of minor sort of discomfort I'm going to feel for the next sort of 40, 50 years or whatever.
Yeah.
I know that's a bit of self-righteous way of thinking about it, but genuinely life
completely.
Is really short. It's going to be gone soon. So I might as well.
I often on the podcast, I like to play the Alan Davis role of just being ignorant for anyone who's listening and asking the questions. So if I ask anything stupid now, feel free to point that out and say you're an idiot. But can I ask, or are you comfortable talking about the sexuality side of it? Because again, it's a huge assumption that transgender people are all gay or all want a boyfriend or all want a girlfriend or... But it's, from what I know, it's far more varied than that and far more of a range. So were you a straight man and then went down the transgender route and did that change your sexuality or preference? Or were you a gay man and went down? What's kind of...
It's another takeaway phrase, really important one, is that, and most people always sort of know this, gender and sexuality are different things. Oh. They share a lot of the same variables, because if you are a man, obviously you're not instantly straight.
Yeah.
But it's like saying, if you say a transgender woman must like guys, it's almost like saying if you're gay, you should put on a dress to conform. They're obviously different things.
Yeah, completely.
I was a straight...
I mean, that's a perfect example there of...
Yeah, well,
it's not, it shouldn't just be, if you like guys, you should wear a dress, or if you wear a dress, you should like guys.
Yeah.
That's not the way it is.
No, they're standalone sort of variables in the human experience.
Some of the best male advances in fashion in history have come from guys who like guys and dress in guys who like guys. So it'd be terrible if all people who like guys had to wear a dress, because I'd have no good clothes to wear.
I was a straight guy and I'm now, I suppose, a trans lesbian. But the labels, it makes it easier for people to understand. You need to have some words to describe stuff. There has to be a semantic link between stuff. But it does lock it in place. It does feel very sort of bridling.
It's tough, isn't it? Because I think you need terms to help other people understand it.
That's
but
what
as,
it is.
Again, as we were discussing before we started a rolling, and I'm not sure if I've discussed it on the podcast, but I was saying on Instagram, I spend as much time looking at good-looking guys as I do at good-looking women. Now, I've never been sexually attracted to a man, but I still have some caution of identifying as straight, because if I happen to meet a guy and fall in love with a guy or be attracted to a guy, I wouldn't want to have to wrestle with that in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, so sexually, far, I've only been attracted to girls. But again, I don't want to have that awkwardness or panic of, oh, this is wrong, if I was attracted to something else.
You could almost
male,
say...
male, female, trans, you know, any area there.
Well, that's it, because then you're coming at it from a place of sincerity, whatever your instant feeling is, your instant interaction is.
Yeah.
You want that to be pure and objective. I'll say you could almost say sexually agnostic would be a nice way of sort of...
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm currently undecided. I don't need to decide. It's fine at the moment.
That's
interesting then. So, where to go next? I don't want to only talk, I want to talk about your music as well.
Okay.
It's going to be obvious we're going to talk about Caitlyn Jenner at some point, because, you know, it's all anyone wants to talk about.
Well, we do hang out every day
the
Trends sort of coffee shop.
Exactly. I think this would be a good point. As said, I got a tweet yesterday. I think I got the tweet the day before yesterday, and I was out and I was in London, and I did one of those rare things where I emailed the tweet to myself, because I get a lot of tweets that I kind of miss or ignore, and not in a horrible way. I get a lot of people trying to push music to me, and I kind of go, all right, there's a lot of people making really bad music. So, I end up ignoring a lot of this. So, but someone sent me a link to your latest track, and I thought, right, I'll listen to this. So I forwarded it to myself, and then yesterday morning I had a chance to listen, and that's when we started talking. So let's hear that now, if that's okay. I'm going to play that track if you'd like to introduce it, and then we can...
Absolutely, thank you. This is it's In Heels. In this stage, to be fair, it's a demo track. It's a bit of a sidestep from my normal stuff.
Again, what was perfect there was, because again, I can be proper Simon Cowell on people, and the fact that it was clearly a demo track was that meant, right, I could just listen to this as what it is. It's not polished, it's not perfect, but well, let's listen to that.
Question: have you ever tried to stand in heels?
Yeah, okay.
Have you ever tried to stand for your rights in heels? Have you ever tried to stand for your rights in the middle of the night when it's cold at a club in heels and the venue insists that you can't take a piss in the little miss room because it's part of the policy? Life is chess. When you're trans and it feels like the rules never quite make sense. It's like the universe is out to wrong you with the black and white boxes that you don't belong to. But I will not be that funny little T hanging tight to the right of the LGB. Since when did the pitch of my voice disavow me the choice as a woman to express what I'm thinking? But who am I to espouse the lies about X and Y's, about girls and guys, or with my YouTube rank and my blank CV? So here's an itty bit, a little bit about me. I'm tall, slender, born the wrong gender, chemically engineered to re-render everything from the face to base, pending 2 to 6 years of surgical mending, thousands of pounds of personal spending, juvenile threats and Facebook unfriending. Click, I can't even look at you, you make me sick. Chick with a dick. See, I came from a town called Tilbury. It's the only place in the whole UK where the UKIP seem to afford their way into something resembling power. I never used to want to leave the house at night, cause a walk to the shops was a fight for my life. Now it hurts that I've learned to be fast on my feet, so I wouldn't be another pile of flowers in the street. Have you ever tried to run in heels? Okay. Have you ever tried to run for your life in heels? Look, trans girls don't want sympathy, neutrality or charity. We want equality, humanity and maybe some fraction of a social interaction that doesn't involve genitals or sexuality. Yeah, see, I won't be defined by my binding, but what I've got in my jeans, or with a J or with a G. See, the latter doesn't matter. As for these, well, that's between Mr. Klein, Mr. Summers and me. See, how do you win this race when everyone who flirts with your inbox spits in my face? You were ready with your fist, now we're kissing instead. So does it matter that my chromosomes are missing a leg? You see, there wouldn't be supply if there wasn't demand from the same mother like I with a deck in his hand. Cause the only trans girls he's ever seen are the kind having sex on a laptop screen.
Romanian aliens, daughters of Damien, here to convert the Episcopalians.
God hates fags! Does he really? I mean, really? Like, are you even allowed to speculate on the mind of the man beyond the pearly gates? Isn't there a rule about that at the back of the book that you use to attack me in that? Look, mate, settle down and have a Snickers, cause you turn into a right diva when you're hungry. God doesn't care what I've got in my knickers, I promise. Take it up with him at church on Sunday. Rest in peace, Rita Hester, Brandon Tina, Neera Johnson, Larry King, Angie Giuseppe, Yasmin Payne, and all the other beautiful women that died at the hands of the church or the public while ignored by the state. You see, it's gender gay when you put your life in the hands of fate, going into battle with a silicone breastplate. I was born in 1989, which means I grew up with the very first generation of Nintendo's Pokemon game. Now, I don't want to alienate anybody that didn't play that game, but for all their kids in their mid to late 20s, here's a metaphor about the Metapod in me. Stuck at level 9 between a Caterpie and Butterfree, using Harden over and over and over. The only maneuver I make is to curl myself into a ball so I'm safe. Cocooned by a cage I can never escape. I thrash like a fish but the walls never break. The shaking of bowel begets an earthquake and it was super effective. But now I'm awake, I'm a chrysalis, perched on a precipice. One last push to facilitate genesis. And it's
am I the winner?
And then
hello happiness.
Well, I'm filled by estrogen, self-confession, or be the best, but don't fuck the rest of them. Compression now builds a crescendo. If she sells seashells on the seashore, that she sells seashells on the seashore. Not he sells seashells, not anymore, not after everything we've had to fight for. Have you ever tried to dance in heels? Yeah, okay. Have you ever tried to dance through hoops in heels? Any idea how that feels?
Yeah, there we go. That was In Heels. And that was kind of... It was interesting, because this is going to sound odd, but the first person who played me your stuff was my mum. And my mum works in, for Thurrock Council and works in the libraries. And has seen you play a few times. And it was really that kind of thing of played me some of your stuff, but on her phone while we're out somewhere. So not really, I'm taking this in. It was like, all right, cool. And when someone sent me this, obviously the departure towards more spoken word or rap, instantly easier for me to lock onto, even if I'm not paying full attention, because it's an area I'm so familiar with. And yeah, I just really enjoyed. I thought the style was great and the content was great. And I thought it really... And again, as a lot of people who listen to this will know, I rarely play tracks on here because it's not really a here's my new single type thing. But I thought you summed up so much of what we've been discussing and what we're going to be discussing in that track that I really enjoyed it. So what kind of informed your decision to do a track more along these lines?
My last music video, it's on the last album, Hang With The Happiness, it's called. It's kind of happy hip hop. I really like it. It's gone down really well.
Yeah.
There's a spoken word bridge and people really went for it. They really enjoyed it. There's a line in it. It's perhaps now to this day, despite everything I've done, my most quoted line.
Yeah.
It's, all I really want to do is thank the fans because everything's been perfect since I came out trans. And even all the bully boys that take the piss secretly want to bend me like an iPhone 6.
Yeah,
and that was it.
Brilliant.
That was that's what I get quoted to me all the time.
Yeah.
And people go crazy. It's just sort of more relatable and more fun. And then
it's quotable lines. And I think the beauty of spoken word and rap, there's, what's her name? Lady Leisha or Leisure. I don't know how you say it. A Queen's Speech 4 track, which she's just dropped. Is amazing because
I actually really like that track,
it's brilliant. It's blowing my mind. I think it's amazing, but she is getting huge, and it's it's because of she has the ability, and in rap and in things like that, you have the ability to speak directly on subjects.
Yeah.
So she's talking now about Rachel Gojal and just all these different things that have happened recently. And she, in fact, references a Caitlyn Jenner in there, and not in a derogatory way,
oh,
which
actually,
is
yeah,
amazing for rap that it's not being. It's just, you know, it's using a social reference. And the beauty there, as I said, is to be able to address things really directly and really frankly, and with, again, if you can come up with a few tight lines or quips or quotable
quips
moments,
that, yeah,
then it sticks in people's heads.
Well, my whole philosophy before was it was about the music and the words came second, almost in a sense of it. You had like this skeletal form, the vowels and consonants, you add meaning, and then that's the song because it's the music that went forward.
Yeah.
This is the complete opposite of that.
Yeah.
It's obviously it's the semantic meaning of the words
that is
at the forefront. Very peculiar way, but it's, yeah, really oddly sort of liberating and refreshing. And yeah, you're absolutely right. You get to the heart of it. She's going on, what is it, the brush your teeth, I think it's called.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If that was a ballad, it would sound ridiculous to sing about that
completely
word for word. But there's no question. It's just like, it's almost like you go, oh, that's a metaphor for something. Or no, she's saying brush
and
your teeth.
And literally the brush your teeth hook is my favourite part, because it is just genius of someone addressing the fact that how weird is it that some people feel comfortable just leaving the house without brushing their teeth? That's gross.
But
and again, it's like, wow, you've just addressed, of all the bigger stuff you could address, you've just addressed something that I've never heard addressed, and that's great.
It's almost like it would feel like it had too much gravitas if it was a musical piece or an acoustic song or a ballad.
I mean, the comment, I remember loving The Streets, but the bits that would always make me laugh would be the bits where Leo the Lion would be singing really emotionally about just silly stuff, and he'd be like, I'm going out. No, like just be,
definitely.
It'd be so emotional. And Mike Skinner was just saying the exact same stuff, and it felt real and raw and serious. And when there's a guy singing it passionately, you're like,
I was
out, ridiculous.
The other night, I won't say where, because he was doing some good stuff, but I saw an artist headlining, and it was almost like he ticked off the box of what a musician should be singing about.
Yeah.
So he had a tune about Mother Nature and how we need to look after her, or she's coming for us.
Yeah.
That would sound fine as a rap. It's still a pertinent issue. It's a big issue.
Yeah.
But as a ballad, it's so dated and so... this tick off the box of, there's people that are not in our lives anymore, but it's all right, they're still here. Make sure you tick that box. And
yeah, that's
again,
covered.
Yeah, it was... It's just nothing authentic about it when you pick the wrong medium to the wrong delivery system to get that message across. But yeah, rap, I say, so concise and visceral as well.
So what was your kind of, let's rewind a little bit. And what was your birth into music? What was, because you was, I mean, the stuff I'd heard originally was more piano based and sung, and with beatboxing thrown in there and stuff like that. Mm. So what was your kind of, how did you come into music?
I'm like 9 or 10 years almost now, straight out of college.
Yep.
Bought a Tyrus 2 Yamaha, really great sort of workstation. I've still got the same one.
Brilliant.
I was really into Jeff Buckley, Michael Jackson, David Gray, kind of synergizing those few guys together. It was always big solo artists. I was never really into
that's
bands
a hell of a three to synergize together.
Michael Jackson, Jeff Buckley, for sure.
I remember hearing a song of yours, and it was kind of going along a ballady route, and then there'd be a few Michael Jackson flourishes are thrown in there, which was, again, it was a wonderful juxtaposition to go from quite a sung and serious, and then those flourishes and beatboxing and stuff like that in there.
And rubbing them together, squishing them together is the thing, isn't it? Because if you flip between the two, it's almost like, well, that's just the two impressions jumping between the two.
Yeah, exactly.
Synergizing the two.
Yeah.
It's the energy of Michael Jackson and the sheer musicality of Jeff Buckley is a beautiful thing. He sings like a string instrument, Jeff Buckley.
It's absolutely beautiful.
So, about 9 years, I'm on it's album number 7, but I took a bunch of the hits, I've got air quotes going on, and stuck them on this last album, Baffled King.
Again, I think that's a key thing that a lot of bands fail to do. I remember there was a band, I won't even name who it is, but I was really into their first record, and we all used to gig together at the same time. I was doing gigs with Adele and Kate Nash and Jack Peñate and all these, and this one group I loved, and they had a couple of songs that I thought should have been as big as anything Adele's done, and I love Adele, anything anyone else done, and then the years went by and it hadn't, and they kind of dropped those songs at the wayside, and when we got them to support us, they would get annoyed because I'd be like, could you play this specific song? Because it's brilliant. I don't think it's seen the amount of light it should see.
Yep.
And so it's good at points to go, right, I deserve a greatest hits. It's not about whether they are actually hits, like in a pop chart kind of manner, but I've got enough of a catalogue. And if you're six albums in, you've got enough of a catalogue to go, right, here's what, in a way, it's making it easier for people who see you live, because it's kind of saying, here's probably the bulk of what I've played.
Yeah,
you have to buy six albums and there'll be a song here that you heard tonight and two on that one, you know, going, here's the kind of stuff that you probably enjoyed.
For sure.
You know?
The process, I remember thinking when the first album, it's all very just playing to the best of my ability because I'm self-taught, so I'm not a great pianist.
Yeah.
And it was all sort of very biblical imagery, sort of supernatural imagery. I really loved it, really, really chuffed with it.
Yeah.
Went down really well. Then, second album, I thought, oh, I'll try and sound like that. But those issues weren't pertinent to me anymore, so there's no authenticity. Yeah. So then the second album, it's like, oh, it's all just sounding the same. So I think, what do I do? Right, I'll try and sound like what's current. All that's ever going to get you is, at best, by definition, second place, because the most current person that's doing the pioneer is the one. So then think, all right, I'll come
and
back
to the original
sound.
And the fact is, they've probably been doing that a longer time than you, because that's how they've got to that point.
Exactly.
So it's a dangerous game to play.
So it's always a question of what to do, and then I realise the overarching thing, it always has to be just authenticity. Yeah. And if you don't feel like sitting down and writing a song, don't do it. That's a really important thing as well. You can't... same with writing books, you know, I'm telling my third novel now as well.
Yeah.
If you don't absolutely have to do it in that moment, don't do it, because it's going to be watered down.
Completely, you know? I agree. I think there's a lot of theories on these things. I think you can always exercise your brain in a writing manner, but that doesn't have to be, oh, I'm sitting down to write the hit single or the main chapter of the book or whatever. If you're beating yourself up about feeling lazy or you're not getting enough done, then sure, go and write something, but be comfortable throwing that away tomorrow, because if you weren't in the right place and in the right zone, then it's good to be doing that to exercise the muscle, as you said, but not being too married to it.
Yeah, it also teaches you not to have too much superfluous stuff in your life, which is such a nice feeling. You know, if it wasn't for our sort of evolutionary imperative to be sort of warm and fed, you know, it'd be nice to just be outside all the time with nothing. It would be so liberating, but you know, that's what it always
completely
comes back to.
So, but it's been going well. You've won numerous awards and had, you know, a lot of acclaim.
It's nice. It's in a good position right now, for sure. Yeah.
So what are your passions on the music side of it? Is it the performing live? Is that the main goal? Because for me, I discussed this on the podcast with Frank Carter a couple of weeks ago. I've realised recently I don't get particularly excited about recording.
Right.
And it's really weird now how the value is going out of physical music.
Mm.
And it kind of makes me not want to record any more albums and just play. Because the playing live is the bit I enjoy and they enjoy. It's an interaction.
Well, you've also got so much now of a back catalogue that people are still discovering
kind
for the first time.
Yeah,
so,
there's stuff to dig out and hunt through. So it's a fascinating one. But what's your main
process? I love the process of recording. I really do. But I don't have any access to that myself. So it's always through someone else's kind of expertise. Performing live, I think whatever people think of me as a musician and the quality of my work, performing live is the thing that I'm quoted on the most. You know, it's them. I put a lot of energy into it.
Yeah.
I genuinely have this ethos of that 30 minutes should be the last 30 minutes on earth that exist. That's it. Play like it's that every single time if there's two people there, which can be uncomfortable maybe for those two people.
Yeah.
But that's great. I love that people not sure which way to go with it. Some people laugh, some people, you know, get emotional about it. And I love that. It's my favourite part. It's pure euphoria expressed through the sort of frankly antiquated physical human form. We're doing the best we can with a language that is beyond our comprehension. But this is what it looks like.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Do you have any discomfort with potentially the boom in, as said, in trans culture, your fan base growing because of that element of who you are? Is there any issue? Because again, I've got loads of stuff where I couldn't give a shit, like any way people are finding their way to my music, I'm fine with it. If it's because I've got a beard and beards are cool now, it's like, cool, come listen to my shit, I don't care. But is there anything that ever you think about I have conflict over that am I building a fan base because of what I am rather than who I am, which obviously are intrinsic and interlocking things, but just to try and
I agree with you for sure, if it's funneling people in and they're seeing the music, the people that don't enjoy it will leave, and the people that do. But
of course,
I'm not naive to the fact that people are curious as well.
Yeah.
And I tried to make sure that was as short-lived as possible. And then, like, let's get back to the work kind of thing. I
mean, yeah.
It's just not fun to be, to have that be the most pertinent thing about your character when you work so hard on a body of work,
yeah.
You know. And then also any successes is blamed. I mean, a lot of people, I think it's someone tweeted, I'm not huge on Twitter, I don't tweet so much, but someone tweeted, told that friend something derogatory and then only popular due to transgender, to which there was quite a loudly vocalised opinion from past fans. I said, she's been doing it for 8 years.
Yeah.
2 years it's been, you know, this is the seventh album. It's, you know, people, they assume.
Yeah.
There's a lot of assumptions about me, which,
again,
life's too short. They'll assume I'll be gone anyway.
Worth,
so it's,
it's not worth worrying about all that. How have you found the reaction, or have you found the reaction changing over this last year? Because it really has been the last year that with Caitlin and everything else there's a far wider acceptance. And again, it's fucking great. There's a far wider understanding. Mm. There's obviously a backlash. I get annoyed that people have to make everything a competition. I see a lot of people saying, why are we calling a Caitlyn Jenner brave when there's soldiers at war?
Right.
So, all right, sure. Then why are we calling soldiers at war brave when there's kids in war zones who are escaping?
Right.
Does that mean the soldiers aren't brave?
No.
Like, you can all be brave in different ways in different areas. And I do think it's important that awareness is being raised by people like Caitlin. I've kind of asked four questions there, so feel free to go in.
It's always the case, as contrarian culture, this idea that whatever's popular gets bashed, and that's just, there's a certain contingency of the public, a percentage that will always just do that.
And within the trans community as well, there'll be a certain contingency that are saying, well, it's easy to be a multimillionaire who can have a photo shoot where you look fierce on the front cover of this, and that, you know, it's not as easy. Again, a walking around Tilbury in, you know.
I don't know Caitlyn Jenner from Eve. That's what I wish people knew. Like, I don't know, I've never met the woman.
Yeah.
She seems like sincere. She was an athlete on telly, you know, that's always over her head, is that sort of publicly masculine exploit. So that's it. The one thing being transgender teaches you, and it's a good thing to always know, it's very humbling, is that you can't be perfect. I will never be a perfect woman in the eyes of anyone, because I have one leg missing on one of my chromosomes. That's it. But that's so nice, because now the pressure's off. You can't be a perfect woman. She doesn't get a choice. She didn't ask to be a trans role model. She just happened to be transgender and be one of the most famous people doing it at the time.
Yeah.
She didn't ask to do that. Like,
exactly.
Why does there need to be... Laverne Cox is a wonderful actress. I love her. And she's also a great spokeswoman for it. She's Orange is the New Black trans actress. So she gets the other side of it. You know, the people that are bashing Caitlyn Jenner, they're all siding with Laverne Cox and saying, no, she's the one we've got to listen to, you know, because she's... slightly less privileged.
Yeah.
And also people, I think, have got this image in my mind, is that she's actually in prison and has no money. That's the character that she's playing on the show.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, still, though, incredibly, again, people speaking of the variation of privilege, it's still high privilege things. I do wish there was more coverage, I guess, for people like Kristen Beck, a Lady Valor, who was a Marine, and, you know, in an incredibly, again, if you're partly because people couldn't argue about the brave part then, because it's like, oh no, this is a soldier.
Yeah.
This is a soldier who was brave in such an unusual, in such a weird area of society that even harder to turn around and go, right, no, I've been one of the most masculine males you could imagine. I'm out there killing, I'm out there doing this, I'm fighting for freedom and whatnot. Mm. And now I've realised I'm a woman. And there's amazing videos of her teaching Marines to shoot, and she's choosing to do so in high heels or in however she chooses to. It's like, that's amazing. But again, why is it a competition? I don't want Kristen Beck getting coverage instead of Caitlyn Jenner. I want them both getting coverage.
And it
shouldn't have to be that, right?
It'd be nice to see them all on a panel and just make it all, you know, just even the playing field.
Yeah.
It is bizarre. And absolutely, it's a very difficult process, blooming expensive process. And she decided to wait till a certain time. Let's all remember, she waited till her youngest was like 18 years old before she did it. It wasn't a huge press thing. Oh, right, now it's the best time to do it. It was a conscious effort.
Yeah.
And then she had a facial feminization surgery. Blooming expensive.
Yeah.
We are allowed to swear on this podcast, aren't we?
Yeah, you can swear
for some
all you
reason
like.
I don't have it in me to
because I mentioned earlier that my mum recommended. So right, you're, in your head, my mum's listening, and you're conscious of that.
Yeah, so she got to do that, sure, and that's not a privilege that all trans people are afforded.
But yeah,
why does that? You know, it's artists that we all adore and admire that are sleeping in sort of 5-star hotels every night. Or whatever. Like,
and we don't get mad at that.
Why is it mad? Like, you know, she's still doing what she does, and let's say that's the thing. She didn't ask for it.
Completely, completely. Do you get any? And again, I'm ridiculously continually likening transgender. Changes to having a beard, but the great bit here is, and this may come down the line an annoyance, but the great bit here is you were doing it before it was popular.
Yeah,
you know, you had at least a year on this kind of, and again, I don't talk about it because it's the most hipster thing to say, and the beard thing is very hipster, but it always annoys me. It's like, I've had a big beard for 10, this is my 10-year anniversary of having a big beard, so it wasn't.
I'm sorry I didn't get you anything.
No, I'm a bit offended, but it wasn't a Shoreditch thing, it wasn't a hipster thing, but is there any level of that when it started to become more celebrated, that you were kind of, did you have any... Well, cheers, but this has been my life for a while now, and this has been my life when will continue to be my life if it stops being popular.
That's the other thing, It's not suddenly going to be like, oh, right, I'm go back now. You don't get that choice.
Oh, it's dropped out. It's not in the press anymore. I'll change,
I'm also aware, like, the way the struggles I've had with my brain in the past and stuff, I'm essentially quite detached from what's going on apart from my work, which I'm very much into. So I've... maybe things like that I've not noticed as much. I've been very privileged that I'm on stage, which is his own little world, and then I'm off stage, I'm in the studio, I'm back, I'm sleeping, I'm eating, I'm back to the studio and off to the stage and stuff. You know, it's a detached kind of lifestyle, so it's almost passing me by. I'll be very privileged, I'll probably get through this whole thing, I'll be a sort of 60-year-old lady, and I go, that was bloody marvellous, and the whole human rights thing happened at the same time.
Yeah,
I'm doing
what
I can at the same time, but again, I was put in front of primary school kids, so they've got there's no qualms there. I get abuse, and I'm like, well, they don't understand, from older people. I've had some disgusting stuff said to me, but it's almost like it bounces off, that's a cliche thing to say, we're on such different spheres of understanding, not higher or lower than each other, it's just a completely different language. It's like talking to a lion, like they say, what's that quote, you know, if they did speak English, we wouldn't understand
them, it's because like of the different places of reference. I get that.
I've not had that that kind of...
I mean, that's huge. I guess it's a huge advantage to be able to have that outlook and to be able to have that, because I'm sure there's a lot of people who are more... aren't as thick-skinned or aren't as intelligent on that, on being able to go, it's fine for them to not get it. They're not meant to get it. They don't get immigration.
It's
they don't get, you know, they don't get a lot of things, so...
For the people who haven't got the families left, you know, that have lost friends and family, or who have lost or are now in a position where they're homeless or jobless, I can't even put myself in that position. I'm not in that position. I can, it upsets me to think that could potentially happen, you know, to trans people. And I met a bunch of people that are in that situation, but I'm not, just cause I'm doing it in the public eye, I don't have a right to comment on that stuff. You know, it's a complete different sphere of understanding. I'll do what I can to push the,
Have you always had a lot of support from family? Just mentioning family there, or family and friends in general?
Yeah, they're awesome. Really beautiful.
Did you always have... it was a very open and welcome reaction to everything.
Yeah. That's great. My father... this is my father's house that we're in now. He's been fantastic. In my career, he's always been like the one to jump in. Like, he's always had like a cash injection there kind of thing, because I grew up with my mum. Like, they divorced when I was little, so mum's the emotional connection there. My dad's a fantastic guy, I love them both so much, it's two different sides of it, you know. And I imagine it's quite disappointing for him, I know, like, to think, you know, I guess every parent thinks of their kid getting married in that traditional setting, that's not gonna happen, but that wasn't gonna happen before. I was never gonna get married. And kids and stuff, which I'm not now biologically capable of even having, because it changes all this stuff,
of course.
Again, it wasn't gonna happen anyway. But you know, it's that finite thing. They've been great. All my family's brilliant.
That's fantastic.
Lovely friends, lovely colleagues. All my musical colleagues. You know, in that's the realm where it's usually there's no issue anyway. So
I mean, you went briefly earlier. I'm jumping back and forth throughout the whole interview at the moment, because I'm finding it so interesting.
Quantum leap style.
You spoke earlier about the fascinating side of parts of your brain being turned on and turned off, essentially the male part and the female part. Do you feel anything with the illness you had? Do you feel that triggered anything or jumped anything along? Was it synesthesia?
It's essentially,
that's often quite there's a level of visualization with that, right? I remember talking to someone about it, and they could see smells, essentially, or smells had a colour and things like that. And it's obviously everything, just to clarify, it's so annoying when people hear the tiniest thing and think that applies to everyone. Everything is on a spectrum and there's a variation. But
that's so important that you say that, that part specifically. I don't know what sort of time we have left. I don't want to, I'm not going to get into
tons
this
of time,
thing.
As much as you want.
This is something that I've wanted to say, and it's an amazing thing about the human brain. It's this process called cross-model abstraction.
Yeah.
And it's what creative people do every single day. Everyone does it every day. We were talking earlier when I was saying about, I'm going to talk about science, but don't worry, I'll keep it light. And then you said, you can go as dark or heavy as you want.
Yeah.
Now, because the word light is a homonym, it means light, weight, or light. The opposite of that is dark or heavy. Those are sort of ideas, variables, or paradigms that you've taken and applied to the idea of a conversation. That's cross-model abstraction.
Right,
so the darker stuff, maybe the more taboo content goes in the dark section.
Yeah.
The puffy, airy stuff and fun stuff goes in the light section.
Yeah.
That's cross-model abstraction. That's what synesthesia is across the senses. You hear, smell, and it's not a different thing.
Yeah.
And there's this bit, I don't know what you like with people quoting your own work back to you.
No, okay,
saying. It resonated with me so much, like emotionally. I was getting a bit teary earlier when I was thinking I wanted to tell you about this in the intro pieces, pieces. One tool, obviously, you have as an artist is to be able to reference pop culture stuff because there's so much emotional investment in that bit that you tap into it like a seam, you know, and you can utilize that emotion. When you reference Quantum Leap, there's this great line of wanting to kind of find this leap will be the leap home.
Yeah.
And as a creative person, you're making all these small connections all the time between these things, like, say, this cross-model abstraction. You're forced, you don't get a choice but to live in, other than to live in a life where you're being pulled in all directions by these connections all the time. And it's great because it means you get to see all this different stuff, you get to see all these different images that other people don't see. But there is that sense of, I just wish I could go home. I'm getting really emotional, so sort of for with estrogen. Just to be able to, like, just go home for just a minute.
Yeah. You know? No, I completely relate and understand. Yeah. I think so many creatives I know have a shared dream, and it's going to sound really dark and ridiculous, but I've regularly been driving home or something and thought, I'd love to just have a crash and just to have that time of resetting. I'm in a hospital bed. I can't do anything else. I get to just go into myself and be me for a minute and not be trying to do. Because again, when you've got, and as you with your, with books and with albums, there's so much that you need to do and so much that you're pulled towards, and working with schools that it's hard to stop for a moment and go, I want to just leap.
Well, even you're in your own mind, the connections that you make, you have to live in a different sphere to make certain semantic connections between words, especially with spoken word. It's a really good example. But then to quote sort of another science fiction iconic reference, Hitchhiker's Guide, they've got that improbability drive, and it's almost like once you've started, once you press the button, you can't turn back. You have to keep pushing it and pushing it until you statistically arrive back home.
So create it
as a metaphor. It's like saying you have to keep innovating and creating until you've covered so much that you can see where home is, or at least arrive somewhere near back to home.
It's bizarre. I was sitting in the car park before coming in, and I was talking to a friend of mine, Polar Bear, who's a great spoken word artist, and we try and meet up every now and then. It's been a while now, and he asked how I was doing. I was like, I'm good, but as you know with me, always doing a million things, always rushed off my feet. And he said he's convinced that I'm going to get to 40, shave off my beard, and just look back at everything. You know, he's always said, I've got, because he knows that every time we try and meet up, I'm like, I'm trying to juggle a million things. And he's like, I know there's going to be a point where you just go, right, cool. Just draw a line under that now. Even if it's for a limited time, but just go, right.
Well, like Jim Morrison, but with an opposite sort of ethos on the beard.
He kind of
stopped and grew a good beard.
Opposite. I was obsessed with Jim Morrison in my teens. And
sorry.
It's bizarre that Jim Morrison was going mental for so long, and the time he actually died was the point where he was off drugs. And it said, having that, I'm going to take some time off and just grow a beard, get fat, and look at everything I've done.
Yeah.
And that's the time he broke. But
almost like the body's saying, right, you don't need to innovate anymore, you're done.
Yeah.
It was this whole thing, you know, needing to achieve a sort of a state of discordance to reach the unknown, or whatever, a state of sensory discordance. His brain's gone. All right, you don't need to do it anymore.
Yeah, we're done now.
We're done now.
That's perfect. Well... I mean, we're over the hour mark, but there's still more I want to discuss and talk about. And one of the things that we mentioned, and again, I think it's an interesting thing to explain, we touched upon it earlier, the difference between transgender and drag queens and being in the entertainment industry. That's an interesting thing, because my instant thought was, you must get tons of bookings at LGBT
things and pride and things like that.
And it suddenly made me thought, right, that's wrong, because that's I'm thinking of drag acts,
right.
You know, kind of, and to be quite, you know, apologetic on that, but that's what's come to mind. I thought you instantly associate drag acts with that kind of situation. Therefore, I thought your music, regardless of what your music's like, would slot in there because you're a transgender woman. So, what is there any conflict or issue there or annoyance at kind of having to compete in that market when it's a completely different thing? It's not.
Well, there is, but it's definitely not to under sort of the blame of the drag queens.
Yeah.
I love drag queens. And my always thing that I say to people is that I love drag queens. I'm just not one.
Yeah.
I'm not that funny. I don't have the confidence to get up and do that. I dress down when I'm playing prides. I don't always wear like a big glamorous dress because there will be that distinction.
It's a
funny old sort of way to live your life. Yeah, to share the stage with people who, they entertain for a living and then they get off stage and that's gone. And they, you know, they're men again.
They associate
as men. The LGBT, the T there on the end. The thing is, there's this movement to try and get the T. I don't know who's going to do this and remove the T from LGBT. But there is genuine movement.
Brilliant.
And it's, I don't understand the logic between trying to dismantle this sort of structure of love and support in any sphere. Why on earth would you want to dismantle that for some pride?
I've not heard of this at all, but I'm going to assume it's because of the first three being a sexual orientation and one being a gender.
Absolutely, for sure.
So I understand that, but again,
that's the logic.
It's not a bad thing. It's a positive thing. It sits together and everyone's pulling in the right direction, the same direction. Yep. That's
all of my first sort of experiences realizing that I was transgender was in prides and the LGBT community. First time I sort of felt a bit confused sexually, I think I was watching a drag queen like eating a banana.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's going on here then?
Damn.
Yeah. So beautiful. There's some of these women. Trans men are the most gorgeous men because they've got the bone structure, right?
Yeah.
6 months on testosterone, they've got a beard and a low voice. It doesn't work opposite for a trans woman. You see my voice, this is what my voice sounds like.
Right. Yeah.
And I'll sometimes kind of maybe air it up a little bit, but for an hour talking on the radio, it would have gone down
anyway.
It's
never going to work.
And if I laugh, it's like... So it doesn't matter. But, they're...
That's a strange attempt to... again, it's over-analysing or over-complicating positive things, right? And again, or maybe I'd understand it if we'd got to a point in society where LGBT had won...
Right.
And not that it's a war, but if we're at a point where everyone was accepting, then it's time to go, right, let's now deconstruct this and go further. But when it's still a genuine battle to get this acceptance, the more the merrier. Pride, or the film Pride, which I fucking loved. I really didn't expect to like it. I saw the trailer and thought it was going to be like The Full Monty for some reason. It had that had that vibe about it. But the beautiful thing there of the coming together of the miners and the LGBT community, because they identified not about sexuality, but about they were both fighting for something and they were both oppressed and not being treated as level people, members of society. Mm. It wasn't about sexuality. It was about a shared oppression there.
That's a really cool thing. You'd get sort of every demographic can relate to the idea, say, of a trans woman transforming. It's a human transformation that's so obvious that you can see. That's something that everyone strives for, this transformation into a sort of a more authentic version of yourself. With sort of homosexuality, you can't imagine a working class person being like, oh yeah, sort of good on him, because what's good on it? It's like this is just a preference, that's fine.
But the
transformation, it's like, oh yeah, good on him. It's like a transforming change across every sort of type of person you can relate. So I think that's why it's actually gained so much speed so quickly.
Do you mentioned earlier of you can never be a woman.
A perfect.
You can never be a perfect woman.
I am a woman. I've considered myself a woman, but I'll never be perfect.
That's what I was going to ask. Is it a case of the genders remaining male and female, or is it a strive to add transgender as a separate gender?
No,
and again, that's just again, it's a place of ignorance here. It's a genuine asking not a theory, is it looking to be that there's a point in time where we have men, transgender men, women, yeah, and transgender women? So four genders, essentially. Or is it a case of wanting just each area to be accepted as men and as women?
Exactly, that's it. It's I should hope that things wouldn't schism off further. Maybe even more so that they would just all forge into one lovely amorphous blob.
Yeah.
But the thing with, when people talk about a trans community, I don't understand the process, the logic there, because as a woman, I want to integrate into the female community, the human community. I don't want to then cordon myself off even more. I understand, if there's people suffering and they need to be spoken out for, and you can have a great transgender role model come forward and show themselves to the world and say, this is what I do, I'm contributing, I'm trying to make myself a good person. I don't want to be in the trans community. I want to be in the female community with all the other lovely transgender people.
I completely get that. And there's something I didn't understand for a long time. I had a lot of gay friends and I started to get annoyed because they were only up for going out to gay bars. Mm. And it was like, I'm up for that, but I'm not gay. And this is getting annoying now. Can we sometimes just go to a bar and then whatever? And it wasn't until years and years later that I was interviewing a friend of mine for a project I was trying to learn about sexuality, and it was a gay friend of mine, and he just made the great point of the reason he likes gay bars and the gay community, and not just gay bars. So he was saying one of the first things he went to was a gay book fair, and I was like, what the fuck is a gay book fair? What? And he was like, it's the simple thing that he felt comfortable holding his boyfriend's hand and knowing no one will be looking at him, or if he wanted to kiss his boyfriend on the head as he got up to go to the toilet, and things like that.
Those little things.
And that's the bit that hadn't crossed my mind, because it's like, even if you're in a very liberal bar, if it's not a gay bar, a few people are going to glance over at that. Even if they're not glancing and judging in any way, I would notice in a bar the guys that are holding hand. Yeah. I wouldn't be judging it or against it in any way, but I would glance over and be... whereas if I'm in a gay bar, I wouldn't be able to engage in a conversation if I'm noticing every gay interaction that's going on. Exactly. Yeah. So, it was a fascinating thing there, and it's kind of... It's almost counter to what you were saying. And, what my original thought was is... Because, again, what you're saying there is an ideal world and scenario where mixing with other women. And again, I think my friends would agree with that as well in the gay community situation. But I also understand that need every now and then to just have a night off from having to think about people are going to be looking or judging. Just have a night off and just go, right, I can just enjoy myself and not think about that.
Those little tiny things now, because of 25 years for me of nothing, are such huge victories. Like, if a male friend of mine from college comes up and instead of grasping me firmly for a handshake, gives me a little kiss on the cheek, that's made my week, because it's just that acceptance that I was starved of, an affection that I was starved of for 25 years.
Yeah.
Every little thing like that is a huge
victory.
Makes
such a difference.
And it's so simple,
imagine,
because it's stuff that you do with everyone. But there's a circuit in the human brain that's, it's a sort of a default heterosexualism or whatever in the human brain, that it reacts differently to women and to men if you're a male or female. And to be able to transgress that is a real noble and heroic thing in a person, to bring yourself to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with guys that do that very, very much so. And obviously,
I'm now very aware I shook your hand as I arrived.
That's a business handshake. That's different.
I was thinking this the other day. Where was I? I was at a casting, and the girl who was doing the casting, it turned into the weirdest thing, because I went for a handshake as she went for a kiss on the cheek. Mate. So I ended up kind of holding her hand as I kissed her cheek, which was suddenly far more intimate,
like,
and weird.
Casablanca,
I'm like,
sort of
I'm holding and kissing the cheek. It's like, oh shit, what have I done? So but it's interesting. Again, it's great to hear things like that, because again, all the more from people from your past and that know you, I'm sure that those slight changes in the intimacy and in the way you'd be greeted.
Yeah,
must mean the world.
Well, because those are all little things. Again, it's a human construct. You know, these are things that we've evolved over time. They're cultural. It doesn't happen in every culture. You don't get kisses on the cheek or whatever. And obviously, in some countries, the men walk around holding hands just if they're mates.
Yeah.
But in our culture, those things that indicate that you're interacting with a woman, to have that is the best thing in the world. It surpasses every single thing else. You know, all the accolades and stuff. As you can see, all these trophies around.
Yeah,
we're just in a trophy room right now.
Yeah.
there's nothing here. I think I've got one somewhere. It's more important than anything.
Yeah.
It's a human interaction, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's beautiful.
I mean, I feel that's a perfect point to end our discussion on. Obviously, I want to extend it by adding, where can people follow you? You're on Twitter. Like, what are you on Twitter or Facebook? Is that preferred medium? What's the best way to?
Facebook.com/ Tall Dark Friend is my stage name. If you type that into YouTube, I think there's like 5 music videos now. I haven't got a website. It was out of date. So I'm still the wrong gender on my website. That's how out of date it is.
Brilliant.
So
brilliant.
That doesn't mean anything. So,
don't go there. I mean, this.
Facebook
and
YouTube.
I now feel I'd be remiss to not mention that one of our main sponsors is squarespace.com,
okay.
Which is how the only reason they're sponsoring us is because it's how I built my website. Okay. And they're a really good drag and drop. I'll hook you up. I'll get you some discounts.
That's cool.
I'll put you in touch. Also, what's ahead? You know, what's the plan for the future?
I don't know when this is airing.
This is going to be in probably 2 or 3 weeks. It was going to be 3 weeks, but I'm really excited about it. Yeah. So it might be 2 weeks. I might move it forward.
That's almost, I think it's
beginning of September.
Timing. Yeah, well, 20th of September, I'm playing a big old gig at the O2 Islington, the big
room.
And it's an RCA thing. They scouted me a little while back. Really awesome. Like, Elvis Presley was on RCA, so for my father, it's the best thing in the world.
Man, that must mean the world.
So I've assembled a band, first time in 9 years. We're a 6-piece group playing tunes from my album.
Amazing. And that's on September 20th. And that's a great venue there as well.
Yeah.
I love the O2 Islington. Yeah. But Academy.
Anyone local to Thurrock, I play Las Iguanas up Lakeside third Thursday of every month.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's, and then just about, you know. So.
That's perfect. Well, thank you very, very much. It's been a wonderful chat, and I look forward to catching more in the future.
Yeah. Thank
Cheers.
You so much.
You've been listening to Scroobish Pip's Discretion Pieces.
There you go. I thought that was great. I was delighted with that. I was blown away. Jordan is such an intelligent woman, so articulate and so open. You know, I'm ignorant to a lot of this shit. I try to keep up to date on things and know what's going on, but it's fascinating to me. So I was aware there's probably some stuff that I'm going to say that's super fucking stupid. And I probably did, but she was, absolutely delightful and welcoming with all of it. So that was a great episode. I really enjoyed that. Please spread this around. It feels like subjects are like this. Again, not in sound bites, not polished on some big magazine. And that's all good too, but discussions I like this, and it was similar with our drugs one with Susie Gage a few weeks ago, our deaf one a few weeks back too. There's been loads that I feel these things need to be shared as much as you can. Yes, we have some huge names on the podcast. We've had, as mentioned in the podcast, we've had Russell Brand, we've had Simon Pegg, we've had Nick Frost, we've had Billy Bragg, so many people, Stuart Lee, a Josie Long, Amanda Palmer. We've had Amanda Palmer on the podcast, for God's sake. So many huge people. But we also have people that I just feel it's important to have these discussions out there and heard. And this was one of them. This was both, actually, because Jordan is a rising star as it is at the moment. So, yeah, I hope you all enjoyed that. And I hope I wasn't too ignorant or didn't do anything an injustice. Thank you for tuning in. And next week, I'm crazy excited. We've got a comedian and actor called Tom Davis, who I don't know if you saw Murder and Success film on BBC Three, but if you didn't, you've got a week to catch up on the entire back catalogue of that, because it's probably my favourite thing that's been on TV this year. It was hilarious. It blew me away. And the way that came about was, Or the way I met Tom was, I tweeted about it saying, damn, that's amazing. And then BBC Three tweeted that or retweeted that. And it turns out Tom's into my stuff and has been a fan for a while. And yeah, we got talking and I was like, all right, you've got to come on. He's also been in so many good upcoming comedies at the moment. He's in Undercover. He's in Plebs. He's in so many good things. So yeah, you're going to enjoy that. It's a good chat. And the fact is, until a few years ago, he was a scaffolder.
You know, he was a working class a grafter, and then he decided to take that chance into comedy, into stand up, and hasn't looked back since. Big things ahead. So yeah, tune in next week for that. Until then, I'm Scroobius Pip, at Scroobius Pip here on Twitter and Instagram, facebook.com/ScroobiusPip, all that good stuff. Speech of Element are records. B. Dolan's already on tour now, I'm sure. No, he's not. He's very nearly. Yeah, thank you for tuning in. Subscribe, tell your friends, spread the word, rate, review, do everything you can, and I will see you next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.